In classical music, the music can give us the grandeur and gravity we crave, but the words can bring it down to earth, down to the specifics of what and whom we're trying to recall. Sarah Fischko looks at memory, music, and the art of capturing a profound and wrenching moment in time.
So often we commemorate our occasions, joyful and sober, with song. Pure music is not enough. Blues songs, agitprop, political songs, pop songs, art songs, songs with words are our markers. For mezzo-soprano Frederica von Stade, words were the only connection she had to her father, killed in World War II shortly before she was born. Her father's tissue-thin letters to her mother kept reappearing.
My mom used to show them to me when I was little. I loved them. I had this fascination with them because many of them are on this VE paper that was sort of like microfilm. And that was fascinating. And then for years I misplaced them somewhere. And they had resurfaced.
And one thing led to another. A poet, Kim Vaith, used the letters as the basis for a text, and Richard Danielpour set the texts to music to create a piece called Elegies in 1997. It became almost a memorial to von Stade's father, Charles. For an audience, it was about war and loss. For his daughter, singing his words, it was more.
I had always conceived of my relationship with my father as one of lack, of not knowing who he was. And from my point of view, the child without the father, all the burdens it left on my mother. And I really, through this piece and this exquisite third movement of it, which is really the father singing, I became aware of what it must have been like to be a young man of 23 and pretty darn sure you were never going to go back.
It was the first time Charles von Stade's daughter had looked at her father's experience from an adult perspective. There was a connection, and she felt it.
It was very emotional, but very sort of otherworldly and cathartic and uplifting.
Not sad exactly, but moving.
I mean, the last words of it is, and I will sing to you in paradise, and I almost can't speak them without being deeply affected.
I will sing to you in paradise.
You know, it's also a way to try and express the unexpressible.
In that case, the unexpressible, as she calls it, had been building up over a lifetime, a child's longing finally stated in song in adulthood. But what about when the reaction is more immediate? What about writing in the heat of recent memory? At times like those, artists and audiences achieve a high degree of connection, as has happened since September 11th. Clifford Channon heads the Legacy Project, a group that studies loss and memory in the aftermath of violence.
You know, artists very often work in isolation, and they're not particularly well understood in terms of how they work or the way they produce. But a moment of crisis like this on such a large scale creates a very interesting juncture for an artist because, after all, an event like this places us all in front of a void, whether it's the void that's been created in physical space or the void that's been created in the emotional and even moral life of a community. But the funny thing is, the void, the empty space, is where the artist actually starts his or her work, whether it's the empty page or the unphotographed film, that place of where do we go from here?
My first reaction when the 9/11 thing happened was one of disbelief, like everybody else. And my first question was, well, what's the point of art now? But a week later, I've realized that art was the only point. What else am I supposed to do?
Composer Ned Roram had been commissioned to write something for this summer's Ravinia Festival and had been planning to begin work around September 10th or 11th, when the course of his work was changed.
And I took poems by various people from as long ago as Shakespeare up through John Hollander, who's still alive. And all of them are about the unthinkability of war.
I hate that drum's discordant sound, parading round and round and round.
There are some angry songs, some thoughtful. He also chose some poems of love to memorialize not only 9/11 victims, but his own longtime companion, who had died 3 years earlier.
All of these things kind of fit together. I wrote the piece very quickly.
Just as Elegies wasn't really about World War II, Roram's piece wasn't really about the events of 9/11.
I wrote a reaction to the event, and I called it Aftermath. And the very last poem by Muriel Rukeyser is called Then, and it's, when I am dead, even then, I will still love you. It's an aftermath of my friend dying. It's an aftermath of, we're all at this present moment living in an aftermath. And the world, of course, will never be the same.
And so art will never be the same either. There are new memories to preserve.
The only way to even approach it is through one person, or, you know, one person's experience, because it's just too large. It's too enormous to fathom.
The most valiant struggle that's deeply moving to me anyway, in terms of the artworks that we can talk about, are those works that show, with all the sweat and all the agony involved, how hard it is to remember, how hard it is to hold on to memory, even the memory of people you knew and places you were.
So for lessons in memory, we look to composers and songs.
People like to hear about inspiration and things of that sort, but we're all inspired. The only difference is that a composer is able to take inspiration and channel it and hone it and make it transferable or communicable.
We are all inspired, and we all remember.
It's the most human impulse to want to remember, but it is as deeply human to recognize that we don't hold our memories in a fixed state, that not only do they change, but they leave us. And some of the most powerful works somehow manage to capture memories fading, memory having been there in your hand and slipping through your fingers.
For Studio 360, I'm Sarah Fishkill.